it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, reacting to a big Titans win yesterday, 30-24 in overtime against the Baltimore Ravens. The Titans improve to 7-3 on the season. Joe Rex Road was at the game yesterday in Baltimore, now joining us from Virginia. Amazing what technology can do. Joe, the interesting part of the game before the game even happened yesterday was kind of the scuffle, the argument the Titans got in with the Ravens on the field. The Titans pregame on the logo at the 50-yard line in Baltimore. John Harbaugh takes exception to it. There's a camera angle of him and Malcolm Butler yelling at each other. All of a sudden, Vrabel ends up in the mix, and the officials are in between Harbaugh and Vrabel. What did you make of that scene before the game yesterday, and how much of that do you think led to some of the chippiness we saw on the field?
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that's the primary, instigator of the whole thing. I mean, I guess, I guess you've already got some stuff. Obviously, you got the playoff game last year, and got Tajay Sharpe doing his little presser after the game, but he's not around anymore. But I watched that unfold, and the Titans were just again. I didn't see anyone like stomping on the logo. You know, it was like T.O. on the star or something like that. But it was the whole team hopping around. A few guys kind of took exception, and there was a little bit of talking. And then, yeah, apparently, you know, the big thing was, I guess, Butler and Harbaugh with some barking. And obviously, the Ravens remembered that. Like I said earlier, Lamar Jackson makes sure to bump Butler after he threw that long TD pass to Mark Andrews that victimized Amani Hooker. But, yeah, just the rest of the game, it was just – there was a lot of talking. A lot of hard hitting, and you could tell it was not just. I mean, this game is—it's probably hard to get through a game without some of that. The way that this game is played, but I think there was a little bit extra for this one, no doubt.
Yeah, and I take a look at the way the game unfolded, and we talked about to open the show in terms of John Harbaugh and Mike Vrabel after the game, and it looked like, from the camera angle that we saw thrown out there, that John Harbaugh may have not shaken Vrabel's hand and brushed him aside after the game. Now, Vrabel denied that after the game. Harbaugh denied that after the game as well. But certainly Titans fans saw that clip yesterday and ran with it on Twitter. Here's what John Harbaugh had to say after the game about what went on between the Titans and the Ravens both before the game and after the game, after the big Titans win.
Hey, Coach, we saw what happened before the game, or we saw it late with Coach Vrabel. What was going on with the Titans players in there before and then after the game?
After the game, there wasn't an issue. I mean, Coach Vrabel, I think, was down there celebrating in the end zone. Then he came back around and shook hands. Before the game, it's irrelevant.
That was John Harbaugh yesterday. Irrelevant before the game. A little bit of saltiness there from Harbaugh.
Yeah, well, that's a tough game to lose, too. But that is – so one thing that definitely happened there was Vrabel ran in with everyone and then came back to find Harbaugh. This whole video clip thing, what it reminds me of is the draft last year when the camera angle, like people were so convinced that Vrabel's oldest son was on the toilet like during the draft. Like I wrote a whole column about this. Like I wrote a whole, and there's still people that are like, oh God, just look at it. You're so, and it's like I understand it. It looked that way. And it looked almost like they staged it to look that way, but it wasn't at all the case. Like it wasn't remotely true. And I do think that I look at this video clip based on what Vrabel said. And again, Harbaugh just said there was a handshake. There's got to be like more complete video out there, right? Like not that
you would think.
Like not that this is that important that like we need to spend our week, dissecting this, but I'd like to just see a full video clip just to end it. That video of Vrabel going back, it looks to me like he was going back to say something. So people are taking that as that's the one time that they interacted and he got shaken off. I can't even tell for sure if they – like you can't even really see their hands. But I think – I don't know. maybe they're both lying, you know, but I think that video clip is one of those things that people get a little glimpse of something and run with it. And then they're just so sure about it. And I just don't understand why Mike Vrabel, he wasn't just like, oh yeah, it was a handshake. He was like, oh, absolutely not. When he was asked if Harbaugh didn't shake his hand. Like I don't see any reason Vrabel would be compelled to do that if it wasn't true.
Do Vrabel and John Harbaugh have like some longstanding friendship that we're unaware of?
I have no idea. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he did say he has a, quote, lot of respect for John.
Yes.
They've got, you know, Vrabel's the Ohio State guy, and John's kind of a Michigan guy. He didn't play there, but, you know, his family. Maybe there's a long-standing Michigan-Ohio State rivalry. I don't know. But it's, you know, regardless, Harbaugh was clearly ticked off, and he's probably more ticked than anything that he's got a 6-4 team that right now is on the outside of the playoff picture, and which is incredible to say that about the Ravens.
It really is. And regardless of where the genesis of yesterday's animosity took place, there was no doubt it was a very intense game. The circumstances, both teams needed that game yesterday. Titans wide receiver A.J. Brown talked about the intensity of the game after the game. Here's what A.J. Brown had to say.
This game started with a lot of emotion. We saw what happened pregame there, some pushing and shoving during the game. Well, you had to come in and just felt like you had to match their intensity on this
one? Most definitely. They kind of set the bar really high when we first came in. The coaches, not even the players, the coaches came at us. So we was like, we see what type of game it is. So it was going to be a big boy fight. You know, as you see, we went to overtime. We came out with a win.
And that was A.J. Brown after the game. And it was interesting to see before the game when Malcolm Butler and John Harbaugh are sitting there yelling back and forth at each other, A.J. Brown coming in and basically being like the peacemaker in between the two of them. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah. And that's A.J. You know, A.J. is like super chill, nice guy. And then, you know, he put the helmet on and he blows up an entire defense on his own. But, yeah, I mean, Butler's that guy. You know, Butler is a guy who is – he's always – turned up to 100 out there, you know, pre-snap, during the play, physicality, post-snap, talking. I mean, he if there's going to be a guy on this team who gets something like that going, it's going to be Malcolm Butler.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, I couldn't possibly love the renewed rivalry between the Titans and the Ravens more. The trash talk between the coaches and players was there pregame, during the game, and postgame. The hitting and disdain between players was definitely there on the field. And, Joe, we talked last week about how, like, the Titans-Ravens back in the day, there was a genuine hatred there that, you know, Eddie George and Ray Lewis, Brian Billick, Jed Fisher, all these guys – I think, had for one another on the field. And you don't see that a ton now in today's NFL, but certainly I think you could make a pretty good case that the Titans and Ravens not very fond of each other.
Yeah, and Mike Garofolo tweeted also that apparently after Henry scored, some Titans players were singing the – so Seven Nation Army is like one of the songs that they play, you know, at – in Baltimore at the stadium. So apparently there was a loud, he called it the most savage move, singing the bass line. So, dun, 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 dun. So apparently there was a chorus of that. and he, according to Garofolo, and again, I,
do you want to sing it again? Anytime we can get
there you go.
Anytime we can get Joe Rexroad singing on the show. Now you've got Porth going. It's a good time.
There it is. There it is. Yes, everyone knows that baseline. And he said the Ravens players didn't react to it. So there you go. But, yeah, who knows when they'll play again? Could be next year. It could be. Could be in the postseason. Maybe that could be possible. That would be a lot of fun. The Ravens would love that because it means they get in. And the Ravens not getting in this year, for as good as they've looked at times, and I still as good as a team I think they have, that would be – boy, that would be – a downer.
They are overrated.
Wow.
One of my biggest takeaways from yesterday's game is that Lamar Jackson, as great of an athlete as he is, he's overrated as a quarterback.
He doesn't have a whole lot of help out there right now, though.
No, I mean, he doesn't help himself throwing the ball sometimes.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, he's late on some stuff, and know, he misses some throws. Again, man, I was awfully impressed with that last drive when they were down, and that's exactly the moment that's supposed to be not his moment. But, yeah, look, he's never going to be, you know, I mean, he's a different kind of player, you know, yeah. So you've got to, I mean, I think what they've done around him is smart. But you also, I really think, like, you got to get him, like, Hollywood Brown just isn't good from what I can tell, you know, and he dropped one there. He's not the guy. You got to give him more help than he has. And I also, let's also remember, and it's no excuse for the Ravens because the Titans were just shredded by injuries, but I do think you get Williams and Campbell back on that D line, and they become a problem for most teams they play, kind of like, you know, what they did in Indy, giving up 10 points to that team, you know? I mean, I still think that this team, if healthy, can be a problem for people. But they don't look like a top contender by any means.
Yeah, and it was an interesting day for Lamar. I thought the touchdown pass he had to Andrews was pretty incredible. And Romo was talking about it on the broadcast. You know, the ball and the play call there, the ball is supposed to go over his left shoulder towards the sideline. And based on the way the Titans covered it, Lamar had to take him back inside and put it over his right shoulder. And Romo was just raving about, like, his ability to recognize that in the middle of the game. I thought that was a great throw. The one play I come back to with Lamar, obviously, is the interception. I mean, you're moving the ball down the field pretty well. Yeah. You just got a first down. It's first and 10, and you let that fly. And Amani Hooker, I mean, it was an easy pick. I mean, it just, that play didn't make a whole lot of sense to me from Greg Roman and the Ravens there.
He had another one. It would have been in the fourth quarter when they had a chance to respond to, I think, one of the Titans' field goals on a third down past Mark Andrews.
Yeah.
And Mark Andrews wasn't really covered. I mean, there were like three or four Titans defensive backs in the area, but he easily could have hit Andrews and he'd overshot him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he misses throws. I mean, he's not going to be Drew Brees, you know. I'm not selling stock in him at this point, you know, as a player. I mean, I still think he's awfully good at all-around skill set, and I think that they can give him more help. But he's never going to be the guy who goes 30 for 32 and just zips it out all day. But then, like you said, that TD pass, Robbie, I mean, he makes some throws that are like, man, how many people have that arm talent, you know? It's just you got to keep refining the game.
When we come back, speaking of quarterbacks, what did we make of the day for number 17, Ryan Tannehill, yesterday in Baltimore? We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game. November is Hockey Fights Cancer Month, and the Predators Foundation needs your help towards the Smashville Donates campaign. Visit NashvillePredators.com/365fund to make a donation to the 365 Pediatric Cancer Fund, presented by Twice Daily. Purchase Hockey Fights cancer gear or learn more. You can also bid on silent auction items by texting PREDS to 76278. Follow at PREDS Foundation on Twitter and Instagram for more info. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth coming back in with a little Seven Nation Army in honor of the Baltimore Ravens.
You want to sing along, Joe?
Da, 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 da. There you go.
There you go.
Oh,
beautiful.
Yes.
I hope that becomes a drop.
Nope, it does too. Let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. CD text in, I noticed during the game that anytime the Titans offense had a bad play, it didn't faze Tannehill mentally. Always the same look on his face, ready to go. When Lamar and his offense had a bad play, Lamar's head would sink and he'd look so beaten up. Seems like negative plays stay in the back of his head. Joe, number one, do you agree with what CD throws out there about Lamar? And did you think that Tannehill always responded in a good way yesterday?
I mean, it's an interesting observation. You know, I think Tannehill clearly responded. I think he's pretty consistent in how he goes about things. What I was stunned by at times were some of the passes he was missing yesterday. I mean, I think we've become a little bit just conditioned to expect him to certainly make all the easy ones, you know, when he's got someone wide open to make the throw. And we're also used to seeing him fit some really impressive throws in some tight windows. at big moments. But in the first half yesterday, I mean, he was missing wide open guys. And I thought, I don't want to say Mariota-ish quite, but there were some times when I think he absolutely sped up so much that he was inaccurate with the ball. You certainly have to think that's pass rush, protection, injuries, all that in his head. So I think he was fighting himself for a good portion of that game. And to his credit, he just responded. I thought he was as good. So again, after that game, you're in the press box and it's like, so what do you write about from that game? You could sit there and just write about the AJ Brown thing or the Derrick Henry thing or the defense. But I was like, to me, like the bottom line of that game and why I wrote about it was, I think Tannehill is what you take from that game and say, see, this is why this team has a chance, because they got a quarterback who can do stuff like that. After in the last quarter and a half of this game, the guy is 14 for 17, 215 yards. And of course, the touchdown to AJ Brown. He was darn near perfect under duress, under pressure, third string left tackle, Ravens coming at him. And he got it out and he was just dime after dime. And I was like, see, that's for all the guttiness of this team and all they did. And there's so much to this game. Like, if you don't have a quarterback who can do stuff like that, you don't win that game.
Exactly, and Tannehill finishes the game 22 of 31, 259 yards, two touchdowns, and one interception. Let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ty text in and says, y'all may have touched on it, but Sombrilo was terrible in pass protection. It's amazing Tannehill didn't get sacked five times. I will say, we've talked a lot about Sombrilo here on the show. I think he's done a pretty good job for the most part, given the circumstances. He struggled yesterday against Ngakoue, and I get it. Yannick Ngakoue makes a lot of people look that way, but wasn't a great day for Sombrilo when he was on the field yesterday.
Right, but I mean, again, like no one in this league is going to say, you know what, I'm going to try to block Yannick Ngakoue with Ty Sombrilo.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it's not a good situation, and I was very surprised at how often he was left alone with him. I think they adjusted some to that. But, yeah, I mean, look, the guy, he's going to get beat by the top guys. And that's what happens when you lose your star left tackle. So, and then now he gets hurt. And Sombrilo's an interesting case, by the way, because they're really – usually we get word in the press box on a particular injury, and we never did with him. And he left the game. He was never seen again. He left the game. So – what does that look like moving forward? I don't know. Maybe we'll find out more today from Vrabel, but probably not.
Sorry. By the way, when that happened, they kept showing Isaiah Wilson on the sideline on TV.
And yes.
Nance and Romo kept talking about how he was their first-round pick, hasn't seen the field. And I got to tell you, Isaiah Wilson, he had the cleanest jersey.
Oh, man. It looked good, didn't it?
It was a very good jersey that had – no dirt on it, no grass on it. It was very clean, untouched, very, very good-looking jersey.
But, active yesterday. You got to take the steps where you can get them. That's the first step.
Well, here's the thing. So if Sombrilo is a long-term thing, is it a situation where, you feel like you got to try to go Kelly over to the left side? And it's time to give Isaiah Wilson a look. I wouldn't guess that they would be in that spot immediately. Like, I wouldn't think it'd be like against the Colts. All right, you're out there, but do you have to think about that adjustment? I think you might. Now, you could also, with a week of preparation, maybe Quisenberry is better on the right side with Kelly on the left side. I don't know. But, I mean, if once you get the number two left tackle out of there, I think you probably have to think about your tackle who has played a good amount of left tackle in this league and moving him over there.
Well, and this goes back to the trade deadline. We talked about, the tackle depth not really strong at the moment. You're one injury away from being a problem. Now, we don't know how significant Sombrilo's injury is, but this is exactly what we're talking about. Now, if he can't go, you've got a pretty big issue heading into this game against the Colts.
Well, look, man, I mean – all this stuff has happened with Isaiah Wilson, and it's been bad, and he's been immature, and he's made mistakes. But if you took that dude in the first round, then you absolutely believe in his talent and in his physical ability to help you this year.
Right.
So, I mean, it's about time, you know, it's about time to see what he has. And I don't think we're too far from that. So if that doesn't come to pass, then how could you not have made a deal?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And also, if you're this far into the season and you're still not confident of him playing, what in the world did you take him in the first round for? Like you said, you obviously have talent and you obviously have belief in his physical ability. We're 10 weeks in. It's time to play.
Yeah, I think it's got to be close. I will say that just from the eyeball test, it looks to me like maybe he's gotten himself a little bit better shape since camp. So, and you know, that Mike Vrabel has talked about that. So, I mean, there's some positive signs of him trying to establish himself. But yeah, you take that guy in the first round. How could he not give you something on the field when you're in this kind of a situation, when it's this dire? I mean, if you are choosing, I mean, David Quisenberry is a great story. You know, the guy survived cancer. I mean, to be in this league and still fighting, it's terrific. But that your first round pick has got to be involved at some point.
Let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, how much will this win boost Tannehill's confidence moving forward, knowing that he can play and win with a broken offensive line? Joe, how much do you think the second half of yesterday's game improves Tannehill's confidence in this situation moving forward? We know it's not perfect. We know, obviously, Taylor Lewan not in there is a huge problem and has been a huge issue for this Titans offense. But the way they played in the second half, how much confidence do you think Tannehill takes away from that?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I still think ultimately he knows who they're playing each week and who's blocking, and that he's never going to go back this year in all likelihood to the first few games when he could make a sandwich and go to his fourth read, you know, which made him and this offense so lethal. But I would think that he would be awfully impressed with those guys for how they fought and gave him a pocket a lot of times late in that game when the Ravens, you know, knew what was coming and the Ravens were just launching off the ball and coming after him. So yeah, maybe there's some more confidence. And I mean, I still think ultimately this offense has to get the ball out fast now. It's just, you have to play a little bit differently.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coy in Clarksville text in, says Corey Davis has 549 yards and AJ Brown has 540. What are the odds with six more games to be played that they can have two wide receivers both get 1,000 yards, something they have not done since 2003 with Derek Mason and Drew Bennett? Joe, what do you make of the chances of maybe Corey Davis and A.J. Brown ending up with 1,000 yards receiving this year?
That's a good question, and it's a great point. And, you know, Corey Davis has been a great story this year. I don't think the chances are great. And I'll tell you, part of the reason is I think in some of these games coming up, I'm looking at you, Jacksonville. I'm looking at you, Lions. Looking at you, Texans. I think the Titans might just be able to run the heck out of football. I mean,
you can put the Packers in that discussion as well.
I was just going to say, you tell me. I mean, are the Packers going to stop Derrick Henry?
Derrick Henry is going to run for 375 yards at Lambeau.
I think this sets up more for Derrick Henry to end up with a big number than for that to happen. I think in some of these games, they're not going to have to throw it around a lot. And if the Titans can run it, they will gladly run it. And again, it's late in games, which we saw yesterday, but it's also late in seasons. And some of these teams are tired and beat up and they're out of the playoff race. And that's when a guy like him can feast.
When we come back, it was another disastrous weekend for the Tennessee Volunteers. They dropped their fifth straight game against Auburn on Saturday. Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us. We'll break down that game and the state of this Tennessee football program. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Second and seven. Darren Tanner looks right, has time to the end zone. Monday, oh Monday!
That was yet another disastrous pick six for the Tennessee Volunteers offense on Saturday against Auburn. They fall 30-17 to lose their fifth consecutive game this season. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday. And to help us break down the Tennessee loss to Auburn as well as the state of this Tennessee football program, we bring in our good friend Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Josh, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, doing well. Another case of the Mondays for Tennessee.
Nice. I see what you did there. That was good. Very nicely done. So, Josh, Tennessee drops its fifth consecutive game. That's the fifth double-digit loss in a row, which is the first time that's happened in the history of the program. What were your takeaways from the latest defeat against Auburn, and where in the world does Tennessee go from here, given how this season has just completely fallen apart?
Yeah, it's another game, another loss, another double-digit loss, as you mentioned, and I think that's added to the list of issues that Tennessee fans have watching the Vols this year, is that it feels like as the season goes along, you're just adding to the list of historical disappointments. That is one right there. I mean, it's just the amount of blowout losses Tennessee has experienced over the last few years, and the conversation around the quarterback position that just continues to be there, and that's going to be the case this week. I think we'll see what Tennessee does. Jeremy Pruitt's answers after the game against Auburn on Saturday did not tell us that Harrison Bailey is going to be the guy. Of course, a lot of fans want that to be the case. Is that the right choice? Tennessee has so many issues besides the quarterback position, but that spot is a glaring one. It's the most important position on the field, and this is such an important week. It's a statement that we're saying it's a really important week for Tennessee going up against Vanderbilt, but this is one that I would just say, obviously, Tennessee cannot afford to lose, and even with a win, it doesn't do you a lot of good, but, man, a loss could do you a lot of bad.
No doubt. And like you said, Josh, there's a lot of other things going on, but quarterback is going to be the focal point. So I threw this out a little, sort of a hypothetical, and a lot of Vols fans got mad at me, but I want to ask you the same question. If you're Jeremy Pruitt and you look at this game as the game that could actually put you in jeopardy if you lose it, and that may not be true anyway, but if you're him and you think that, and you think, look, I have to win this game. And he should feel like you got to win this game to me. And you're just saying, look, which quarterback gives me the best chance to win? If you were in that situation, knowing all you know now, including that Garantano is very good at just losing games for the Vols, who would you choose, Garantano or Harrison Bailey?
When you phrase it that way, I think I think the answer is probably Jarrett Garantano. That's who you're going to be most comfortable with, because you know you go in with a pretty clear advantage, right, when it comes to the roster, Tennessee versus Vanderbilt, what the Vols have. And I think you have enough talent to where your thought is, hey, if we keep running it with Eric Gray, we saw last year what that did. He ran all over Vanderbilt. That was kind of his coming out party. And he did it against Auburn this past weekend, and that's where you would run your offense. So I think Jarrett's probably the answer there. The way that I would approach it, though, is I would say, hey, we should be able to beat Vanderbilt with either quarterback. If Tennessee cannot beat Vanderbilt with Harrison Bailey at quarterback, then to me, we need to stop talking about the quarterback, because that tells you how big the problem is within the program. I would look at it this way. I would start Harrison Bailey to give him an opportunity in a game where he should be successful and allow him an opportunity to get, as much as we've talked about the lack of reps that he's received, he's gotten a lot more in the last few weeks in practice. He's now been the number two guy. He's now played in three SEC games. I would play him in a game where, if I'm Jeremy Pruitt, we should be successful. The offense should be able to move. You get him some time, and then you get him ready for games where you know you have to score a lot of points. And I'm not going to sit here and say that Tennessee's going to have a chance to beat Florida and Texas A&M. That would sound ridiculous right now. But I would be trying to score as many points as possible to be as competitive with those teams as possible. And Harrison, I think, has the upside. There could be extreme downside. Maybe that's the case. And if so, then that makes you probably worry about where you are headed for moving forward as a program. But I would try to see what you can do with Harrison Bailey in this offense against Vanderbilt to see what it might be able to do for the offense moving forward.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Josh, is there a scenario in your mind, and I'm talking obviously about this game on Saturday against Vanderbilt, if they lose this game, does Jeremy Pruitt, is his job in jeopardy? If they finish 2-8 and there's nothing crazy going on off the field that would lead to his firing, is there a scenario this year where his job could be in jeopardy?
I think there is a scenario. Right now, if you asked which side would I lean on, I would say that Jeremy Pruitt's job would not be in jeopardy because of the financial issues that the athletic department has. They don't have a ton of cash. They now have committed more money to Jeremy Pruitt, and the cost to get him out of his contract plus his assistants would be extreme. They do have Butch Jones coming off the books here in a few months, so that's a positive for Tennessee. So you can just slide the next coach into the buyout position if you want to. But, you know, it's almost like you just account for that within the athletic department. I don't even know if that's a joke. But right now, I don't think that's the case. But losing to Vanderbilt would just be devastating. And if we're talking about Tennessee going from an eight-game winning streak to an immediate eight-game losing streak, which, you know, would just – with the loss to Vanderbilt and then all the other games, I'm assuming being by double digits, and who knows, maybe in the Vanderbilt loss would be, you're just not going to have anybody on Jeremy Pruitt's side. And that's going to be the real issue. So people who are very influential with what happens with the athletic department, do they come back and say, hey, look, there's been support, but we can't do it anymore? That would be the scenario, I think. So right now, I don't think that his job is in jeopardy, even with the loss this weekend. But the scenario that would change that and prove me wrong would be losing to Vanderbilt. It's a game he can't lose. He really can't.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I understand anyone right now saying, look, there's just no way. It's year three. All the money, the financial issues you laid out there, Josh. And also, honestly, I've kind of thought this through a little bit differently on Philip Fulmer. Usually when you have an AD who hired a head coach – and the AD's still there, that gives that coach more security because it's kind of on the AD, right? If it doesn't work out, and that's usually how it goes. And if it's not, quote unquote, your guy, then it's easier to make the change. I would say, though, look, Philip Fulmer came into the end of a coaching search with very few options, right? I mean, this is an easy one to, if you did make a move, an easy one to say, look, it was a bad situation. We did the best we could. Now let's do a full coaching search. Maybe no one says that out loud, but I guess the way I look at it is Fulmer isn't as tied to Pruitt as I think a lot of ADs and coaches they hire just because of the circumstances, or am I overthinking that?
No, I don't think you're overthinking that. I think you're probably right. I would also add in that Philip Fulmer just got a contract extension, so Tennessee has committed to him, and I know that can sound a little contradictory. Well, didn't Jeremy Pruitt just get a contract extension? Yes. But Philip Fulmer is Tennessee's guy. He was brought in to save the football program, and to this point has not done a very good job with that. But that extension could provide a little more security to Philip Fulmer if he decides, you know what, we didn't get it right with Jeremy Pruitt, but the circumstances were what you just said. Now let's take a real shot at it. And recruiting's gone pretty well. We have a nice roster to offer up. So let's see if we can go get somebody that is more experienced to come in and be the guy. And the rebuild should not be as extreme. That's the way you would pitch it. That may not be true with Tennessee's football program, but I think that's the way that you would pitch it if Phil Fulmer's in a position where he decides, yeah, this isn't working out. And he is tied to Jeremy Pruitt, and that's the guy that Philip Fulmer brought in, but he knows how this business works, and he knows that changes are made all the time, and he doesn't want to be a part of that change. But if it's just in his position, if you see Jeremy Pruitt lose this week and the support is gone everywhere, and assuming the next two games are played, I mean, realistically, those games are going to be awful, right? With Florida and Texas A&M, if you're coming off loss against Vanderbilt, it could be awful either way. But if we're talking about worst-case scenario, which is finishing with eight straight losses, it's hard to overstate how bad it would be. Also, if we're talking about just wild scenarios of Jeremy Pruitt getting an incredible amount of support at the beginning of the season and having an extension, and by the end of the year being fired, and that sounds unbelievable. A reminder that we're talking about Tennessee football here. So you can't come up with too many scenarios that are truly unbelievable.
Josh, last thing for you here. The second half problems of this team have just been pretty incredible to watch in terms of how lopsided the score has been the last five games in the second half. What's going on there in the second half? And is there any way to describe it at this point other than coaching has to be the main part of it and the lack of adjustments?
Well, that's where you start. I even thought boy, did I end up being wrong. But I thought, hey, that maybe they're getting something going here because they finally got a stop against Auburn's a long drive but held them to 3 points, and then Tennessee had its own long drive and was doing what it needed to offensively to move the ball. And then the play that we heard at the beginning of the segment happened, and it was, oh, yeah, there it is again. So it's another 10-0 third quarter, and you felt like the game was over at that point. So the thing to me is that they found different ways to still leave fans disappointed at the end of the games, whether it's the Kentucky game where it's all Kentucky in the first half and you just can't come back from it, or the Arkansas game where you're not playing great, but you're up 13-0, and then you blow it all in the third quarter, or the Auburn game where you're up, you're kind of trading some punches, and it looks like you're going to carry this into the fourth quarter and then snap your fingers. And the quarterback position has been a part of that. But Jeremy Ruhl is right. I mean, a blown coverage that leads to an easy touchdown for Schwartz, that gets momentum back on Auburn's side and creates a little confidence for what they're doing offensively. And there's so many issues. That pick six play, by the way, really was the perfect combination of bad route by the receiver, bad protection by the offensive line, and then the ultimate death knell, the bad decision and throw by Jarrett Garantano.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Josh, great stuff as always, man. Thank you for taking time to join us. And going to be a really fascinating game on Saturday between Tennessee and Vanderbilt.
Reminder to Tennessee fans, basketball starts in 2 days.
That's right. Yes, it's basketball school now at Tennessee. Josh Ward has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Appreciate you joining us. And, man, what a time it is right now for Tennessee football. When we come back, we'll break down that loss to Auburn. And where does Tennessee go from here? How much pressure is Jeremy Pruitt under in this game against Vanderbilt coming up on Saturday? All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune into this weekend's NFL Game of the Week on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Gary Force Acura. This Sunday's NFL Game of the Week is Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs taking on Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. with a 3:25 p.m. kickoff. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, breaking down another brutal loss for the Tennessee Volunteers, 30-17 against Auburn. They've dropped their fifth consecutive game, and Joe, the first time in program history they've lost five consecutive games by double digits. It's just a wonderful time to be a Tennessee fan right now.
Truly amazing. It's bad. And, you know, again, I'm watching this game and I'm saying there's a good football team in there. Not a great football team, but there's a pretty good football team in there. I mean, that's an Auburn team that, yes, is all over the map. But for example, you know, beat LSU 1-0. I mean, the Vols did a lot of things in that game. And then before that pick six, I think the Vols were, in good shape to win that game. And that would have been a big, big win for Jeremy Pruitt and all those players in this program. And then it all just blows up. And you just have the handful or less of mistakes in a game that just completely turns this team on its ear.
Yeah, and it's been awful. And obviously 2-5, you've lost five in a row. The fan base is just in an uproar right now with Jeremy Pruitt and this program. And Pruitt was asked about that after the game, how he goes about managing the fan base, that a lot of them have questions about the direction the program is heading. Here's what Jeremy Pruitt had to say.
Coach, what would you say to any fans or any other reservists who are starting to have questions on the progression and direction of this program?
It ain't my job, guys. My job's to coach, okay? If you want to ask me a football question, ask me a football question.
So there we go with Jeremy Pruitt, already firing back in the press conferences. As you can imagine, that didn't go over very well with Tennessee fans on Saturday night.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's just like, I mean, the guy's emotional. This is, I will give him that he cares about this as much as anyone out there, and it's all going badly on him. And so I understand not wanting to field questions about fans and stuff in those moments, but you know what? You got to suck it up and do it anyway, because that's ultimately why you are making millions of dollars. You know, that's who you work for. And I understand in the heat of the moment, coaches struggle at times, and I'm sure it's not easy, but you always have to keep in mind what this is. You are coaching a child's game and making millions of dollars because so many people care about it and want to watch you and want to come to these games. And so I think every opportunity you get to say something to them when it's going like this, you should probably do it.
Jarrett Garantano finishes 15 of 23 on Saturday night against Auburn, 156 yards, and just an absolutely brutal interception to smoke Monday. Brought back for 100 yards for a touchdown for Auburn. After the game, Jeremy Pruitt asked about Jarrett Garantano, if he's still the quarterback that Pruitt feels like gives them the best chance to win. Here's what Pruitt had to say.
Yeah, Jeremy, you said, you know, figuring out guys that give you the best chance to win. Where you sit right now, do you think that Jarrett Garantano gives you the best chance to win at quarterback?
Absolutely. If I didn't, I wouldn't play him. I mean, guys, he didn't miss two field goals, okay? You know, he didn't blow a coverage. There's lots of things. Did he make a mistake? He made a mistake, absolutely. I made mistakes in the game, okay? So, the bottom line is, guys, is we all have to execute a little bit better to be productive so we can score more points on Saturday than the other team does.
Offensively, the name of the game is scoring points.
Yes, it is scoring points. I heard those comments from Pruitt after the game talking about Garantano. And look, I'm not surprised he said him, and maybe he's right. Maybe Garantano is the best option they have. We've talked about that a lot. To me, and Joe, you may disagree with this, and that's fine. There's no way Jarrett Garantano should see the field one more time this year. Not one way. Harrison Bailey needs to be the quarterback the rest of the way. If you can't beat Vanderbilt with Harrison Bailey at quarterback, you got a whole lot of bigger issues. Harrison Bailey needs to be the quarterback against Vanderbilt. We know what's going to happen against Texas A&M. We know what's going to happen against Florida. Doesn't really matter who the quarterback is in those games. You need to put Bailey out there against Vanderbilt. Jarrett Garantano's time at Tennessee needs to be done.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if I don't have to watch more Jarrett Garantano playing quarterback, I'm not unhappy about it, okay? Don't get me wrong. And I know how Vols fans feel about it. And I really completely get it. I will say quickly on the pick, just and remind me who was doing color on the game.
It was McElroy, wasn't it?
You're right. It was Greg McElroy. I mean, now, of course, he's a quarterback. Sometimes quarterbacks band together, but he made it seem like when he broke that play down, it was completely on the receiver for that pick six.
You know what you have to do to disprove that? Watch Garantano's eyes the entire time. He's looking at one guy for 5 seconds.
Yeah,
one guy.
Sure. And you still, you know, you let it go. And, so regardless, it's just a bad situation. And when Pruitt says stuff like that, I mean, I can't blame any Vols fan for just screaming back at wherever they're listening to him say those comments, you know, because it's just this. And look, I think some of it is a personal relationship with the kid. The kid's been absolutely torn apart, like he's a pro player, for his performance. But that's life in the SEC. So I'm sure some of it is just. I mean, Pruitt's not wrong that Garantano's not the only reason that this game went bad.
Sure.
But that play totally changed the game. And look, I think it's a good point and a good way to say it the way you and Josh said it. Like, if you can't win this game Saturday with any of those quarterbacks, then what's up with you, right? I get that. But I also, the reason I asked the question the way I did is I do think that Jeremy Pruitt, if he's thinking about the whole picture, the whole situation, he's got to know, like, if you lose this game, don't feel comfortable about anything.
Sure.
I mean, some people are still going to say, oh, he's fine. There's no way they fire him. I would not. I would move off the 100% confident on that if he loses this game. I would go ahead and put anything on the table because, like Josh said, what you don't predict or what you can't see until it happens is the negativity that builds on itself around something. And again, gets into the boosters, gets into recruiting, all that stuff. And at some point you sometimes will get to the point where it's like, dude, we can't go on with this guy. And I think that's possible if they lose to Vanderbilt. So with that said, if you're him, you have to think in terms of just who is it? Who gives me the best chance to win this game at quarterback? The fact that it could be Garantano is terrible for Tennessee. But that's what this is. I mean, that's what we're seeing.
I don't trust him to make that decision anymore. I have no trust in Jeremy Pruitt, even if he thinks that Jarrett Garantano is the best decision. I have no trust that he's right. I mean, what does he know about a quarterback? That's what we figured out in 3 years of Jeremy Pruitt. He has no idea what gives him the best chance to win. That quarterback room is an embarrassment, and that is 100% on Jeremy Pruitt. To me, there's one way to go about this. There's one way. It's Harrison Bailey. And that's the only thing left that you have to salvage this season is get him out there and get him looking somewhat ready, somewhat competent. And if you can't do that against this Vanderbilt defense, which is atrocious, you need to move on. It's as simple as that to me.
Do you think this is what will happen?
I honestly don't. I think Garantano will be out there.
Garantano?
Yeah.
See, another thing with this is like the senior, and maybe, I mean, gosh, I mean, these guys have got to also be like, dude, enough. But I know that a lot of those guys on that team, the older guys, very much support Garantano, right? I mean, those guys were really outspoken last year when he kind of came back and got on that winning streak and played well down the stretch. You know, does it upset those guys? Not, this is not why you make the decision. I just wonder if there's what's the effect on the team either way with the decision. I would hope that those guys would be now also be like, dude, let's try the freshman.
Well, I mean, look, at this point, and not to be rude, but who cares about the old guys? This is not about them anymore. This season right. is done. I mean, they're done. And look, I've got a lot of respect for Trey Smith and some of the older guys that have been around and been through some really tough times at Tennessee, but this season is not about them anymore. This is about the direction of this team. You've lost 5 games in a row. Screw the old guys. Screw how they feel about this. You've got to get out there and get some sort of light for your program moving forward.
Yeah, look, I think, and this is not why you make the decision, but you think about just the reaction either way to this. Like, if Vols fans see Harrison Bailey out there, like, they'll want to watch the game at least, right?
Yeah.
Like, they'll have some interest in the game. And, you know, if number two's back out there, you start right away with people just furious. Again, that's not why, you know, coaches have to block all that stuff out. But I think you're right, too. Like, you have to not worry about the effects. I think you got to at least give Bailey more reps this week and start getting him ready. Because after this week, like you said, there's zero excuse for playing Garantano in those other two games to me. Like, those are games that you have to get the freshman as much of a chance to get ready for next year as you can. This week is very interesting.
Which is why, to me, you go ahead and get him in here this week. Now, look, I would have done this after the Arkansas game, but you go ahead and get him in there this week, get his confidence at a place where it just isn't absolutely crushed against Florida and Texas A&M, because that's what's going to happen, is they're going to play Garantano in this game, and then they're going to put Bailey in for the last two games, and it's not going to go well, but I don't know what else to expect from this coaching staff at this point. I did want to bring this up and save this clip for last because, man, was it a doozy. Jeremy Pruitt was asked on Saturday about his offensive coordinator, Jim Chaney. Here's what he had to say.
Coach, with so many inconsistency on offense, do you still trust Jim Chaney as your offense coordinator for the rest of the season?
I don't know. Did you watch the game? We had more yards than they did. So I don't know that there was inconsistency or not there.
Thank you, Butch Jones. That was the first time in a while I've looked at him and just been like, dude, this is ridiculous. Like, get this guy out of there. I mean, it's just such a ridiculous response. We had more yards than Auburn. Great.
Yeah, that's bad.
You scored
that's
17 bad. Points. Your offense is the worst in the SEC. Congratulations. Just terrible.
Yeah, that's just not, again, not reading the room. I mean, you as much as I hate non-committal coach speak, that was a good time for it. And he didn't go there.
Yes, it was. Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mike texts in and says, UT reminds me of this. The ugly guy gets a date. At the end of the date, he gets a kiss on the cheek, and he immediately proposes to the girl. What a comparison for Tennessee football right now. Pretty nice, Mike. I like that.
Okay, explain that to me. Who's the guy, who's the girl?
Tennessee football is the guy. They get a kiss on the cheek from the girl and immediately just propose. Instead
so
of
this is like Jeremy Pruitt?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for explaining. Okay.
Yeah. I'm the text interpreter today. When we come back, we'll dive back into the Titans and the Ravens. What a win it was yesterday for the Titans. Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesale Link studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.